Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. My name is Kurt Mortensen with the Persuasion Institute, and we are going to talk about persuasion today. We have some background noise. If you can mute yourself out or hit star 6, that'll help us out. There sounds like a car or a cell phone. Mute yourself out. We can keep it interactive. Yeah, your car's beeping.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if it's going to be quiet, that's fine. We're just getting some background noise from you once you get things started. So let's talk about some things today. Again, the name's Kurt Mortensen. It's the Persuasion Call. Today is September 4th. Are there any questions about the call last week when we talked about questions? Questions, comments, rude remarks, anybody want to fill in? I'll take them all. We're still getting a lot of background noise. So if you're on a cell phone, please hit star 6 or in a car. That would really help us out. Pretty please? All right, if it gets too noisy, let me know. I can mute everyone out. Just don't like to do that. So the last week, of course, the focus was on questions, asking the right questions. And as we study top persuaders, we know that top persuaders tend to ask. I just muted everyone out because of the background noise. Didn't like to do that. If you want to come in live, you can hit star 6. I'll unmute you here in a little bit. Again, cell phones, when you're in your car, we get a lot of background noise, and it just interferes with everyone. So everyone's muted for now. We'll open it up for questions later. Hopefully the background noise is not as strong. Last week, again, was questions. Top persuaders ask 3 times more questions. The ability to ask questions is critical to your success. Because a lot of persuaders are so concerned about, vomiting all the features and benefits, wanting and being able to say so many different things. But the reality is, if you learn to ask questions and learn to listen, the prospect will tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. I mean, it's literally that simple when you're good at doing this. And so I want to talk a little subset about that today, something that's very different in the world of persuasion that a lot of people teach you the wrong way. And it's understanding objections, it's understanding human nature, and that's what we want to point out. Now, a lot of people say objections are good, and I disagree with that wholeheartedly. Now, objections can be good, but the reality is if you want to become a great persuader, you need to solve objections before they happen. Because if you're talking to someone about real estate or internet or network marketing, whatever you do, and they have an objection, that's like slamming on the brakes in their mind, so they've stopped, but your presentation keeps going. You don't even know that they've stopped. They're stuck on the objection. And so you need to be able to solve these objections before they happen. That is the best time. Now, it won't happen 100% of the time, but you need to try to solve objections before they happen. That's number one about objections. Number two, it's also amazing to show what the research is showing right now is, how can I put this? We'll monitor a top persuader, 2 top persuaders, for example. They'll have the same persuasion IQ, they'll have the same leads, the same script, and they tend to get different objections. So as we do a little research and try to figure this out, one of the things we do notice, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it here, and I don't think you want me to, is when you look at the objections you get, the questions that people ask, what we're noticing is that the objection you get the most is the objection you still have. Okay, let me repeat that. The objections you keep getting over and over again tend to be the same ones. One that you get the most is usually the objection you still have or the objection that scares you the most. You're kind of manifesting it. Let me explain that. If you keep getting it's too expensive, part of the challenge is deep down you don't believe it's worth it. That's just reality. That's what we're finding. That is just persuasion, understanding objections. So our goal here today is to talk about objections and to learn how to solve objections before they happen. So let's talk about what we call inoculation. Now, inoculation comes from the medical term where they give you a shot of antibodies. They give you a shot of the disease, a weakened form of the disease, which gives you the power to confront and defend the strong form of the disease. Let me explain how important this works. We'll talk about, for example, the Korean War. Now, during the Korean War, Americans were shocked, because what was happening is all these captured soldiers were willingly cooperating with the enemy. And that had never happened before. Now, they thought it was torture, but that wasn't it. But then when they did a little research, they found that the soldiers were not tortured, but they had brainwashing sessions with a skillful questioner. Now, the soldiers were questioned about American ideologies like freedom, democracy, and equality. And what was happening is the soldiers couldn't defend their beliefs. They couldn't defend their beliefs about freedom and democracy. They'd ask them about it, they'd question them about it, and they didn't have enough information. They knew they liked it, but they didn't have the information. So what would happen is they would get them to doubt democracy, they would doubt themselves, and they weren't able to defend America, and they just a little bit at a time. And so what happened is they learned to train the soldiers to give them information about why the country's great, why they should do different things, and it went a long way. Okay, now this is important. Follow me on this one. We see inoculation every day used in the right way. You have to prepare your audience for whatever's going to happen for them. For example, if you know your children are going to be approached by a drug dealer, you know that's going to happen, so you need to inoculate them. You need to give them information so they can defend against the attack. Okay? So you tell your children, look, a drug dealer is going to come. They're going to make you feel stupid. They're going to give you free samples. They're going to say this, this, and this. So when it actually happens, it doesn't have the sting, and they know exactly what they need to do or say. Or in a courtroom setting. If somebody gets up in a courtroom, for example, the attorney stands up and says, you know what? The prosecution's going to call my client mean, evil, dumb, and a bad member of society. And that might be true, but that's why he's not on trial today. So if the other side ever says anything close to that, they've been inoculated and it doesn't have the same sting. Are you with me on this one? So what inoculation does, it increases your credibility and your ability to persuade. Because you're presenting a weakness, giving them information, so when they are hit with something negative or a negative part of your product or service, they have the ammunition to fight against it. Now, let me just give you some examples, and then we'll open it up for questions. Now, I'm going a little deep here, but this will go a long way in your ability to persuade. Okay, this is not persuasion 101 at all. So first of all, you don't want to give them too much information. Okay? You do not want to give them too much information. So let's talk about this. Let's say you're selling photocopiers. Okay? Don't know if anybody does that. Let's say you're selling photocopiers. And you have the most expensive photocopier on the market. It is by far the most expensive. It costs the most. And so you're meeting with XYZ Corporation. You sit down with the purchasing agent, and you go through all the bells and whistles, and you leave some information. And they say, oh, great, we have other presentations. We'll get back to you. And there's nothing you can do about it. But you know your competition is coming, and your competition is much cheaper or less expensive. And you know they're going to tout that as a benefit. So what you need to do is inoculate that person to defend against the attack. This is how it would go. You would say, yep, you know what? This is the top of the line. This is the most expensive photocopier on the market. Let me tell you why. There are other photocopiers that are less expensive out there that do this, this, and this, but this, paying the extra cost, is going to save you money here. It's going to do this. It has a longer warranty. It'll last longer here, here, and here. So when that other salesperson says, oh, yeah, they're the most expensive, they have the ammunition. They have the information to defend against that attack. Very simple. And here's the fascinating thing about this, okay? Very important to understand that when we teach trust, and trust is an all-time low, and one of the things we're noticing with trust is, and one of the five C's of trust, if you've studied that, is credibility. What we're noticing is when you talk to a prospect one-on-one, they're looking for a weakness either in you or in your product or service. And if you don't give them a weakness, they're going to assign one to you. You follow me on that one? They're looking for something that's wrong. Because if you don't give them anything that's wrong about you or your product or service, then it's too good to be true and there is no trust. Here's what we're finding. When you reveal a weakness, it actually increases trust. It increases trust. Now, if they're looking for anyone, you might as well give them a weakness and turn that weakness into a strength. Not that you're an axe murderer or a convicted felon or something like this. You reveal a weakness, that your product's too expensive, turn it into a strength because it makes it top of the line. That increases trust. That increases credibility. Okay, you follow me on that? So let's say you're in real estate, you're in real estate and you're knocking on doors, okay? And you're a one-person company. And you're working with somebody on a real estate deal, and you know they're either going to work with you, a one-person company, or they're working with another large company that has, say, 100 people to it. Now, that's a perceived weakness that it's just you. Now, take that. They're going to find out anyway, and if you try to cover it up, you're going to lose the business, so you reveal the weakness and turn it into a strength. So that weakness would be, say, look, you know what? I'm a one-person company. I know you're talking with XYZ Corporation. They have hundreds of people. But you know what? You'll never get lost in the cracks. You only have to deal with one person. You'll have my cell phone 24 hours a day. I'm going to work with you from A to Z, and I'm going to spend time with you until we've solved and this, and you fill in the blanks. You've given them a weakness. You've turned it into a strength that increases your credibility and your trust, and that's all part of inoculation to where, look, if it comes up later, if a spouse says, yeah, but they're a small company, they have the ammunition to defend against it. So just to recap before I open up the lines, and hopefully the background noise and the car noises are gone, is that your goal as a persuader, number one, is you pre-solve the objection before it happens. That is best case scenario. It won't happen 100% of the time, but that is your best case scenario. Number two, we talked about the objection you get the most is the objection you still have, meaning you need to dig deep and really, do you believe in your product or service? Do you really believe it's worth that? Do you really believe your services are worth what you're charging? And number three, it's critical at times to reveal some weaknesses sometimes. It increases your credibility, increases your trust, but it also, you need to turn that into a strength. Okay, again, this is not persuasion 101. This isn't what people will usually teach you, but when you start to grasp these concepts, you become a power persuader, because that's what I do all day long. I watch top persuaders. What are they doing what the average person's not doing? Because an objection is like hitting a brick wall. You keep going and they have stopped. You want to solve the objection before it happens. So let me bring everyone live to see the background. Sounds like it's a little better. Does that make sense to everyone?
Yes.
Are there any questions about that or examples you want me to go through?
Hi, Curtis. Dave Daytona, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing today?
Great. Awesome. Yeah, my question is, in a network marketing scenario, some prices are high, some prices are low, and in my case, it's rather costly for one to work on a program. So the cost is the factor. So what I try to do is take for instance, my product is say the Mercedes Benz, as opposed to the little Volkswagen of the industry, to create value for my product and worth. Because they're going to obviously say, "Well, Dave, that's kind of pricey to get into that business, isn't it?"
So is your network marketing company, is it one of the more expensive ones I'm gathering? Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, just for example, say it's $1,500 to get going, as opposed to $49.95.
And that's another thing that you need to inoculate against when you're talking to people,
right. Is
say, you know, there are other network marketers out there that are $50 a month, they're much more inexpensive, but this one, like you say, is the top of the line. This is the Rolls Royce of the industry, And it's not about how much it costs today. It's your return on investment in the future. And here's why we're different. We're better. And you inoculate them ahead of time. And that's a big challenge with a lot of network marketers is that how do you build the perceived value? Because a lot of times if you're getting it that it's too expensive, what happens is you've blown your presentation somewhere. When you get to the price, they need to say, wow, well, that's it. That's a great deal. So you need to spend time building the value to it to help them see that. Because, you know, a $1,500 investment for your own business that can generate $1.5 million over the next 10 years, that is a no-brainer, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But people don't see that a lot of times, and so you need to, you know, spend the time to build the value and break it down for them. And the law of contrast talks about this, that, you know, this is incredible value. And even in a seminar setting, and if you ever come, you should run to the front of the room very fast. What I'll do is I'll take a $20 bill, and I'll say, I'll sell a $20 bill for a dollar. And guess what happens?
Right, people jump all over it.
They jump all over it, and they take it, and I actually do it. And then I ask the person, well, don't you need to think about it? You want to talk to your spouse, you want to read my brochure, you want to go to my website, you don't want to sleep on it, and guess what they always say?
No, I don't need to. It's a great deal I'm in. I'll do it right away.
Exactly. So those are some things that we work on. When it's an incredible deal, you don't need to think about it. They don't need more information. And so spend time contrasting that. And a lot of people in network marketing will contrast it to, for example, a Subway, how much does it cost to get into a Subway? Does anybody know?
$100,000, $150,000.
$100,000, that's one way to do it. Looking at the return on investment, those are all things that will help you out.
Now, do I talk about the value that you get when entering my program? So I'm talking about my program, and we, you know, we have conference calls like everybody else, but I promote them as a premium value. Therefore, when they get all this stuff, you know, they're thinking, oh my gosh, that must cost like $10,000. But, you know, no. You know, we've got a deal running or we can get you going today for, you know, my price.
Two things here you want to do that's very important. You hit the nail on the head. They're getting, you know, $10,000 in value for $1,500.
Right.
You want to package that way. This is what you're doing today. And the other thing there is you want to separate everything. They don't get everything for $10,000. So you have your standard bundle of material, and then what you want to do is you separate. As a bonus, you get this, 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 and this, and that's another $6,000 value. The perceived value goes way up. I don't know if you read the study about the bake sale. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, sure do.
Right, where they separated, you know, two cookies and a cupcake for 75 cents, but they sold a lot more when they say, look, cupcake 75 cents is a bonus, you get two cookies. So the more you can separate it out, whether it be, and you could add value too with a free session with you or, you know, throw some different things in that you can have a high perceived value and a low cost, and you want to separate it out as much as possible. That increases the value. And the other one too is reducing it to the ridiculous. Are you familiar with that?
Yep, absolutely.
So yep. If it's $1,500 divided by, what, 350 days a year? What's that? So you're telling us, what we're talking about here is $4 a day for your own business. And that's another thing that will really help you increase the value of your business.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much.
You bet. Does that help?
Absolutely, yeah. I was the guy in Orlando and Tampa with my buddy Greg last fall.
Oh, okay.
Time with all you guys, and it's great. And anybody who hasn't been to Kurt's seminar, you got to go. You absolutely have to go.
Oh, good plug. That's a good social validation right there.
absolutely. It's well worth it.
Now, another thing, too, with network marketing is a lot of times, you know, the initial credibility of the industry, you're going to get a lot of the knee-jerk reaction that it's too expensive.
Right.
And so you have to kind of work through that. But once you get past that, you know, it's a great income opportunity.
And then I try to do the takeaway as much as I can. As far as, you know, we're looking for special people to do this. Maybe you're not ready for it. And all of a sudden they turn around and say, well, wait a minute, why aren't I qualified?
And then that's good. Some people say, yeah, you're right. You know that was a waste of your time. And then the other people, you can really gauge their interest that way to see how it is. Again, it's just, that's human nature 101. It's kind of amazing to watch sometimes.
Because if they don't want, if they're not going to put the effort into it, then I don't want them on my team.
You know? In the long run, it would be worse for you anyway. You know, you want people in your team that are working it, that are making money, and making it happen. You bet.
Absolutely.
Great. Any other questions out there? You guys are easy on me today. Questions? Anybody? Questions? Well, what will you think about that for a second as we kind of review what we just talked about, especially with the pricing of your product? Now, remember, you should never get that it's too expensive. You should build it in such a way that when you get it to price, that it's a no-brainer to them. Again, it's a return on investment. Who cares if it costs $10,000 as long as you get $30,000 in your pocket? It's return on investment. Now, another one many of you are violating when it comes to price, a big complaint we get is as we interview prospects. Again, that's another fun thing that I do is I interview the prospects that you've talked to after they've already lied to you, is what's happening is you're giving your presentation, and for some reason, when people get to the price or when they get to the point where they need to ask for the credit card or they're going to ask for their business, they get a little nervous and tense inside, and they do a couple things wrong. First of all, they make it way too long. You're not surprising them. Shouldn't be surprised that you're going to ask them for money. So instead of taking 5 minutes, you're taking 15 minutes because you're delaying the inevitable. And the complaint is this, is that your demeanor changes. They can sense that you're a different person because you're nervous and tense inside. You're kind of different. You're not as friendly, and so your demeanor changes. And bottom line is that it's freaking people out, okay? They're like, well, this person was friendly and nice, and now they've changed or different. So they see all these this demeanor change when you get to the pricing part. Again, it shouldn't surprise them that you're going to ask them for money. And you should not take 15 minutes when you can do it in 5. And remember, you're persuading from the very moment that you see them. It should be seamless all the way through. And again, it shouldn't surprise them what you're asking them to do. If that's the case, you need to work on your whole presentation. Remember, you're persuading the whole time. The moment you shake their hand, the moment you pick up that phone, that's when the persuasion process starts. And it needs to be seamless all the way through. So watch your demeanor. That can be sensed either in a recording of an audio or even a videotape. Those are different ways to see that because they're not going to call you on it and say, are you nervous? Are you tense? They're just going to feel it inside. And sometimes they're not even don't know why they're feeling nervous and tense inside. It's because they're feeling your nervousness. They're feeling your tenseness. I guess that's a word. And it's get transferred to them. We're like sponges a lot of times with emotions and energy. Attitude, enthusiasm, and so even though you think you're covering it up and they don't call you on it, a lot of times they can see right through it. Any questions?
You're in total advocate of practicing your presentation before you actually start meeting people.
Absolutely.
Now that means we can like try it on friends or family and just go through our routine, just to rehearse.
Yeah, even if you're rehearsing in front of a mirror or in front of a camera, the big challenge there too is you have to understand that you need to be able to adapt your presentation to different people. Now, if you're giving a presentation one-on-one, you need to adapt it. Now, you're always going to give the same potatoes, but you need to be able to adjust your gravy. Does that make sense?
Yes. Absolutely.
If you're dealing to an analytical person, you're going to crank up the statistics. You might talk about the compensation plan. If you're talking to an amiable person, you'll probably spend more time with the stories and talking about the success stories and a few things like that because that's what they want to see. And that's one of my pet peeves with network marketing is a lot of times people have the same presentation, and they're good at it, and it works some of the time. But if you can adjust it a little bit, learn to read people, and customize. But once you get the potatoes down, and when you feel so confident with your presentation, then you'll have the ability to read the person, to identify the personality, and to customize it to them. and that way it'll go a long way.
Now, when you say that, are you talking about, like, in previous calls we've talked about the red, the white, the blue, the different personality traits of, you know, of those different, like a white person might be the giver person versus the red person?
Yeah. I mean, and you could even break it down to a simple thing. Are they an analytical person or amiable person? If you can just start doing that first, that's going to go a long way. Because I don't know if I mentioned it in the seminar, but, you know, most people don't get the compensation plan the first time you tell them.
Right. That's true.
And they're going to lie to you, right? Oh, yeah, it sounds great, because the confused mind says no. Nobody wants to look stupid. And that's true with real estate, especially when it confuses people. And so if you're talking to an analytical person, you might want to spend time going over the compensation, but a truly amiable person that's concerned about, you know, feelings and getting to know people, that's going to probably send most of them over the top. And it's not something they need to know to join your company.
Or when they don't have questions and you know that they do, is, I mean, a lot of times they'll be in a situation where I know they've got questions. They don't get it. Nobody ever does in network marketing.
Mm-hmm.
A way to address that, how do we address it? Do we say, like, well, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, and they had a question about so-and-so. What do you think about that? And then all of a sudden, maybe I was thinking about that, too. That's right. What is that?
There's a couple ways to handle that. If they're silent, you need to work in the beginning in developing more rapport, because the more rapport there is, the more willing there is to ask questions. So one thing you mentioned that's very important, if you're stuck and the rapport's not built, and you say, you know, most people have a couple of questions here, and one that I get the most before I ask you the question is this, and you go into that. That's one way to handle it. But two, as you go through the presentation, you need to keep the door open to let them ask simple questions. And you have to reward them emotionally, say, you know, that's a great question. Thank you for answering that. I appreciate you for the questions. And make sure that they feel that you appreciate their questions, you want their questions, you expect their questions, you know, back to the law of expectations, that it just keeps the door open that way.
And it gives them a sense of self-pride and intelligence on their own part.
It does, you know, and a lot of people, you know, when they ask a question, they sense it like an objection, and they just say, you know, great question, thanks for that, I appreciate that. And, you know, it makes them feel smart. You know, a lot of people don't even ask that question. You know, wow, you're asking some good questions. Those things, you know, law of esteem, building their esteem, goes a long way. But you want to keep that door open to let them know you appreciate their questions. And then if you get through it, again, it's a rapport issue a lot of times. If they don't feel comfortable asking questions, they don't feel comfortable looking stupid. Because if you build their esteem and they know that you like them no matter what, they're willing to open themselves up more. But if you got to that point and maybe the rapport wasn't built, you're right on when you say, okay, this is where the most questions I get right here, and then I'll let me go over these couple right here. Then I'll go ahead and answer the questions you have, you know, expectation, and that'll go a long way for you.
Since they're asking these questions, that gives you the opportunity to build even more rapport with the person, tell them more about your product and the exciting things about it. So I guess that all goes forward to closing the deal, so to say, if they're asking questions or shows interest.
Yeah, you know, that's a kiss of death if you've given a presentation and they don't have any questions and they're not ready to go. Something, you missed something somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So you want, the more questions they ask, the closer you can get to sealing the deal.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good questions. Again, this is true with real estate, internet, whatever you're doing. I mean, these, doesn't matter what you're doing, these, the principles apply. Well, good stuff. All right, so remember, try to pre-solve the objection before it happens. Make sure you take a look at the objections that you're getting. And from last week, make sure you ask questions, learn how to listen. I can't repeat this enough, but when you learn to ask the right questions, they'll tell you everything you need to know to persuade them. Then you don't have to shoot in the dark. And here's a great question here, network marketing is, well, what does the perfect home-based business look like to you? Real estate. Well, what does the perfect home look like to you? If there was a perfect solution and a genie appeared, what would that look like to you? And then you just shut up. They'll tell you everything you need to know. And you're like, wow, well, that's what a perfect home-based business. Well, here's funny. Look what I have. And you fill the blanks. Did you feel the power of those questions?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you just, well, they'll tell you everything you need to know. Just listen to them and be sincere and be interested. Remember, you're not salespeople, you're consultants, and people love to be persuaded by consultants. All right. Well, thanks for being on the call. Any topics you want to hit next week? Well, if you don't know, I'll come up with one.
I have a question. Did you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Gerardo Ramirez. I haven't joined all of your calls, but I was at one of your seminars in L.A. And I have two things going on. I have the business that I'm starting in real estate, but I'm also fully employed. I work for a medical center. It's an academic center, so they have both research and teaching and clinical care. The gentleman that I report to is the head of basically all the physicians in the organization report to him. And when I was hired under premise of having two roles. One is to be a chief of staff for him, and the second is to manage a lot of the activities that really cut across multiple areas. The question that I have for you is, I'm into the job now 2 months. One of the things that we expected to happen is to have certain areas report into me. Now, this is a highly political organization, and I'm really trying to figure out how I can influence the people that need to make the decisions and to basically accept the change that is going to be coming, which is they're going to lose some of the areas they're reporting to them because they're going to now report into me, which is a loss of power in some ways and loss of influence. But I want to be able to present the information and the recommendation that I have without making it look like, look, you're just started here, and what do you know about this? So any tips you have just based on what you've heard, and obviously if you have other questions, you can ask for clarification.
So are these people that are underneath you or above you?
No, so these are vice president levels. There's specifically one that is a vice president that also reports to the same boss that I have. I am a director level. He's a vice president. We both report into the same senior vice president.
So you're pretty much almost equal then?
In terms of both reporting to the same individual yet, but in terms of, he has 12 years ahead of me in the organization in terms of having influence and managing things. Now, I know that my boss...
You've got some ego issues there too, I bet, right?
Yeah, so I know that, our boss is not... unhappy with everything he's done before, so he's looking for ways to change some things, but he specifically has avoided making some of the tough decisions because he knows there's going to be some downfall of politics and kind of there's always a balance between not taking too many people off, but on the other hand, doing the right thing. So timing is really critical here, and what I have been doing is building a rapport with the leadership, all of the leadership that reports into the same, into my boss, which, he has quite a few number of department chairs that are basically VP level, building a rapport with the staff and really trying to round up enough information so that when I open my mouth, it doesn't sound like, well, what the heck do you know? You don't even know anything. But rather that they have heard, that basically some of the things you were saying earlier, that I've been listening to what they're saying rather than just... And of course, bringing my own perspective. I not only bring my own perspective without a context, I guess. So without having the details, obviously, what strategy would you use to convince both my boss and the other people that, hey, this is something we want to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a couple things, and I'm kind of shooting in the dark here, but, in a situation like that where people have been there a long time, there's ego issues, and you'll need to brainstorm this a little bit. It might not come to you instantly. Is when you're meeting with them, how can you make your ideas their ideas, right? I mean, that's the main thing. How can you make it their idea? And when it's their idea, they buy into it. You got to make sure you protect the ego. Sometimes in a situation like that, you can come in and say, my job is to make your life easier. Your job is easier so you can focus on what you do best. And you know, getting this and this and this is not the best thing you do. I'm here to help you out. You know, more of a, you know, a role to where you're there to help them and serve them. You're not threatening to them. Because ultimately that's what it comes down to, is they're going to feel threatened. And so how can you package it in such a way to where they don't feel threatened, you can enhance their ego, and that you can make it their idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would search for as you go through that and figure out different ways to do that. Just, you know, if something's like, you know, these numbers take you a lot of time, that's something I can take off your plate or maybe help with their idea. If it's a time-consuming thing, I'm here to help you, this is what we're doing. So they see me, you know, as part of the same team and not a threat. You know, a lot of people like to hold on to things in the business world because it gives them value, and they think the more things they hold on to, the more job security they have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so if you can diminish that that's not the issue, it has nothing to do with that, that would help you out too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'd spend some time brainstorming that, you know, how can you make it their idea? How can you make it be a role that you're in it together? You're here to, you know, serve them and take some things off their plate. And then that way, they'd be more than happy to give it to you.
Okay. Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
All right, good question. All right, everyone. Hope you took some great notes on that. We will also be here next week. But with that, go out there, persuade with power, and go out and make the world a better place.
Thank you.
All right, good night, everyone.
Good night. Thanks a lot.
All right, you got it.